and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, a Wednesday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. The next 4 hours, hanging out with you, talking a lot of different things today. We'll get into some Major League Baseball. The Royals, red hot, break them up, 5 in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th. 5 in a row for the Royals. And catching the Guardians. Getting close to the Guardians and, unfortunately, the Tigers finding a way to win in extras over the Pirates yesterday. But scoreboard watching, 10 games in, love it, 11 games in now. So we'll talk some Royals today. We will talk some college basketball. Myron Metcalf will be our guest coming up at noon. ESPN College Basketball Insider presented by Jackson County CASA. We will talk with Mick Schaefer coming up at 1 o'clock. KSHB 41 Sports Director. Hang out with him. We'll talk some football throughout the show and a number of other things that we will get into. 913-912-4810 is the text line to join us. 913-912-4810 if you want to text in and be a part of the conversation. What's up, fellas? What's up, Sterling? You fun game last night, right? You enjoyed it?
Dude, electric. It was, besides the 30-minute review, which just destroyed my ability to get things done last night.
They got it right.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I said even before they fully came back, this feels different than in years past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Cole Reagans clearly did not have his best stuff. He was laboring. I know. We needed one more strikeout. I know. You and I were both on the same page there.
Did the Royals really win if Reagans didn't get over 5.5 Ks? I mean, did they really win last night if he ended up with 5?
It's bittersweet.
Yeah.
Bittersweet.
Bobby hit the things I needed for my parlay. I was sitting here going, Bobby triples! Bobby triples.
You got a Bobby triple in your parlay last night?
And an RBI. And I was feeling good. Yeah. And then, of course, Cole Reagans got to the 0-2 count and then a ground out.
To pain you.
Yeah, that was brutal.
He had, this is a total aside, he had 4 different guys that had a 1-2 or 0-2 count that put the ball in play for an out. He just needed one more. But regardless, who cares? They win, and he did his job. And honestly, not getting the 6 Ks is part of the story last night of what he did.
And then you go to the bullpen, and all the dudes were nails.
Yeah.
Nick Anderson, John Schreiber. I mean, the list goes on and on. James McCarthy, 2 innings, right? The 9th and the 10th. Bobby Witt Jr. defensively doing what he's doing defensively all season long, which I keep trying to point out to people. That's almost just as impressive what he's doing offensively as defensively. Salvador Perez is turning back the clock yet again. I have some numbers, not even offensively, but defensively, I want to get to with Salvi, because I've noticed that he just looks fresher back there. And obviously some of that's him playing first base now, so he has fewer days behind the plate. But Salvi looks revitalized. This team feels different. When they got down 3-0, it wasn't just, okay, they're about to lose 9-1. They're not going to see a random home run in the 9th inning, and that's it, just a pad of stat.
What's funny is... The Reagans one hurt me. It's this one. It's this mic over there. You're good. You're good. That gets everybody. Everybody. Every time. Every time, because it's mic 3, but yet you're sitting over there and the cough button is right there, but mic 3 cough button is over by Sterling.
That's a reach.
100%. 100%. Mick does it all the time, so you're good. And you don't sit over there. You know, you host. You're over here when you're hosting.
It's a new spot for me. I got to learn.
Absolutely. So last night, you talk about this is how different the Royals are. They're down 3-0 in the 5th. Cole Reagans, it didn't work out. I made my money back on Royals money line plus 400 down 3-0 in the 5th.
You live bet it.
Yeah, I would have never in a million, I wouldn't have wasted $5 last year. But there's something about this team that I'm like, they're down 3-0. You know, they're having good at bats against Javier. It's not like he's just throwing BBs and Ps up there. You know, he's been fine. They're doing fine. Cole Reagan's battled through five. The bullpen's been nails. I'll throw a dart. I'll put $5 on +400 for the Royals to win outright. And they did. That would have never happened, ever. I wouldn't have wasted $5 on that. They also wouldn't have won last year. But that's just like a little morsel of how different they are. And that's just like a personal anecdotal experience of sitting there and putting, you know, $5. That's not on a live bet for a team down 3-0 in the Royals against the Astros with Christian Javier on the mound is not the, you know, and Hader sitting there ready to go in the ninth inning if they get there. That's not the smartest bet, and it would have never happened last year.
How many Kia Kaiahuis did the Royals have in the first 5 innings? I call that warning track power. I call that just into the warning track. So,
well, they have four of them?
It was nonstop. Even Bobby's triple was
Garcia, yeah. Garcia, Witt, Salvi. Did MJ hit one? I don't know. MJ usually hits
Vinny
one.
Vinny poked one, I think, to right center. It wasn't center. Warning track. It was damn close. Hit it a little bit too low.
But yeah, they had, you're right. They had some, they had warning track power. They had some WTPs there.
And now we'll call them Kia Kaiahuis. That's what
we call them
on this show.
I'm good
now,
with that. Okay? I love saying the name Kia Kaiahui.
TM.
All good.
TM.
It's back when I hosted Ranny on the Royals at night back in like 2007. Me and Ranny, a night show like a couple times a week for an hour.
But I think that goes back to your point.
We talked a lot of Kia Kaiahui, okay?
Yeah. D. Brown.
Prodigy. The Hawaiian Punch.
That's right.
Joey Gathright really getting involved.
Dude, he jumped over a car.
Yeah.
Okay. And also a pitcher running down the first baseline in spring training. I was there. I saw him leap over the pitcher. Okay. That was amazing. And Ryan Friel. Don't forget about him.
Oh,
R.I.P.
Oh, yeah.
R.I.P. to Ryan Friel. Did you have faith, Jack, that, you know, down 3-0? Is it different like that from the feel for you? Because again, there's the optimism that comes in, but that's a little more than optimism to actually put some money on it from my standpoint. But I just had this weird confidence in, like, this team's going to figure it out because that's kind of what they've done. And that was the White Sox for four.
Yeah.
This is the Astros.
Yeah, the White Sox series, when they fell behind 3-0 to Garrett Crochet, is like, keep this game within three because the White Sox bullpen is terrible. With Houston, a little bit different. You know, the offense had their chances, though. Like, when you see putting a ball in play over 100, right, you're getting guys on base, you're working the count a little bit. You think in the back of your mind, they keep it close enough, they're going to have a chance here. And that's been almost the evolution of this rotation that now back-to-back starts. We were so used to all these six-inning shutouts, seven-inning shutouts, and it's like, oh, when are they going to have an off night? Well, back-to-back starts now, guys have had off nights. Alec Marsh wasn't that good on Sunday. Cole Reagans would tell you he wasn't that good. He gave up 10 hits in 5 innings. Really good lineup. I mean, Houston came off scoring 10 against Texas the day before, so they were getting
and
a little bit hot.
Back-to-back wins.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they were coming in a little bit hot here, but where you can see the evolution is that these starters, when they don't have their best stuff, and I know for Royals fans, you resonate that with James Shields. James Shields would always say, when I didn't have my best stuff, I still told myself, I got to get through 5 or 6. I got to keep this game close. I'm now going from I want to dominate to I got to keep this competitive. And we saw that from Reagans. I mean, he never had great stuff in his outing. Houston was just timing him up. I thought he was living in the zone a little bit. But once you got to the fifth and he got through that and it was still 3-0, it was like, get one run back. And then you get to a two-run game. It gets a little bit tight. It's more pressure on a Houston bullpen that has had its issues. You had your chance. And the Royals have struggled this year with runners in scoring position. We all know that. But that power adds a different element now. And they've got, you know, I think at least going into last night, they had the most home runs in the American League.
With the second most behind Houston.
Yeah, so they just lost that, or they didn't homer last night. Yeah, so you look at the possibilities there. You get one guy on, you're down three, well, home run, one run game. So that's where the hope comes back from. Now, the bullpen, I'm sure we'll dive into here, that's changed the perception. Mm-hmm. Going into that White Sox series, they were dead last in ERA. Now they're 16th in baseball. That's just middle of the pack. You would take
I looked
that
up
in
the
heartbeat.
Same thing, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, things can even out, and that's why you can't overreact, even to the good things, in a 162-game sample size. But you got to give them credit. I mean, to win five in a row, the 2014 Royals won five in a row in April. The 2015 Royals won seven in a row to start the year. Like, we know how hard April has been for the Royals, and what I've been so impressed with is this offseason, it wasn't like nobody's caring about them. You had national MLB Network guys saying they're going to win the division. So they had immediate pressure of they got to play well in April, and They were 0-2. They're 7-2 since.
This feels more real to me, and it's just 11 games, small sample size. You're already taking a drink, so Sterling, can you take a drink, please? That's an open beer. I'm not sure if somebody else had some of that or not, but go right ahead. Risk it. You know what? Risk it all for some. You know what? They won last night. Do what you got to do.
Celebrate.
But small sample size, so we take a drink here on the show when we talk about that. It's just 11 games in, but it does feel more real because watching the other teams in the Central, like, I'm not watching the Yankees start 10-2. Right, I'm not watching, you know, these other teams. The Rangers have a lineup where, mother bleeper, the stupid ass lottery, and see Wyatt Langford batting third. Wyatt Langford last year was at Florida, and he's batting third for the reigning World Series champions. And by the way, a lineup that has some damn good players. It ain't
two
like
MVP candidates up the middle.
I mean, right? He's batting behind Simeon and Seager. And then Langford, and before Adolis Garcia.
And Josh Young. Or is he injured?
He's injured. He broke the wrist.
And Evan Carter.
Yeah, who was struggled, but he got his first
hero.
Got his first home run last night in that game. But, like, again, that's a total aside. The lottery is dumb, but, you know, Wyatt Langford is, you know, batting third. But, like, they're not going up against that team in their division. Detroit is a nice sort of sexy pick like the Royals. They've got some players. They've got some nice younger guys. Cleveland just lost Shane Bieber, and that's massive. That's 28 more starts the rest of the way that they are not going to get from a guy who could have 230 Ks, right? A sub-3 ERA, an ace for a team. And the Twins, I mean, they're okay. We saw the Twins. I think the Royals could have taken all three from the Twins. And if they were playing the Twins right now, maybe they do, because the Twins aren't playing really good baseball either. So, and Duran's still injured for them as their closer. So, looking around, and I don't have to talk about the White Sox. So, those are the only other
They did win last night. They beat
did.
Cleveland.
Yeah. I know, that's right. I'm scoreboard watching. I'm like, come on, Benintendi, way to come through, dude. Well done. Nice job. Look at you, Pedro, over there just
getting it done.
Yeah.
Doesn't care about the eclipse. I care about baseball.
Is that
Bruce Bochy
over there? That looks just like him. I don't know. Is that Art Weaver? I don't know. The guy's managing his ass off. But it feels more real because looking around the division, I don't see a team that you're like, yeah, that team's way more talented than the Royals. Okay, that team's going to have to suffer some injuries throughout the season for the Royals to be as talented as they are. I think they're comparable to every other team in this division, and it's a matter of plays you make or don't make against the Orioles and the Twins, but plays you make against the Astros, Bobby Witt diving for the ball in the hole and stopping a run. The throw to first was odd. It looked like me. That was actually me with a crow hop to get it over to first. That's what it would look like. Those fields are big. So, you know, the throw was odd, but even Vinny putting the ball in play. Putting the ball in play, not striking it out, not popping up. I know he got jammed, but putting the ball in play and Bregman, you know, you made him make a play. And he overthrew, you know, first base. That doesn't happen very often for Bregman. But you know what would have been a definite out? A strikeout. There's a 0.00. In fact, yeah, that's right. On-base percentage and average is zero with strikeouts. Zero. Major league average is like 280 for batting average, you know, balls put in play for BABIP. That's better than the zeros. And Vinny doesn't strike out a lot. But even that little bit, like runners in scoring position, numbers aren't great. Well, that's going to get you a zero batting average and a zero on base percentage because it's a throwing error. But he still came through to a degree, a play here or there that's made, and the Royals find a way to win. They could be, you know, 6-5 right now and us go, you know, Reagan's didn't have his great stuff, you know, and they end up losing a close game to the Astros. That's a good Astros team, but, you know, you still feel pretty good. But they got one from the Astros and maybe one that they gave away to the Orioles and Twins, and it starts to water finding its level.
It's the Lucas Duda right there. That's what it was. It was the Lucas Duda.
Why you got to bring Lucas Duda in this? Come on, man.
Catching strays
years
later.
What, are you going to bring Owings in this?
No, when he was with the
Mets.
Bless his heart.
The Hosmer,
Madash. There's the rule of 54. Right, where it's you're supposed to win 54, there's 54 you're going to lose, and then what do you do with the 54 in the middle in the close games? That's what typically separates and defines a season. Well, this is one of the 54 in the middle. This is one that could have gone either way in the past few seasons. The Royals have lost the majority of those middle 54. These are the ones they have to come away with victories, and they did. So I think that's the change. It's the middle 54. You're not going 162-0. You're not going 0-162. But what can you do in those close games? Do you win them? Do you lose them? The Royals, again, were able to come away with a victory.
Well, you look also, too, how unforgiving baseball can be, and when you give up opportunities. That Baltimore series, I think, was a perfect example. The Royals should have swept that series. I mean, absolutely mm-hmm. should have swept that yeah. series. The last time the Royals trailed, didn't have a lead or tied in one of their games was opening day. So they've been right there every single time. They should have swept Baltimore. They swept Chicago. They've won one game in Houston. That's all shoulda, woulda, coulda. But last night, another part to what you were saying there, Sterling, is the Royals should have lost that game because, remember, I think it was in the seventh, first and third, nobody out. They didn't
score.
Right.
Nobody.
And the golden rule in baseball is any time that happens to you, the other team's going to score. And the bullpen locked it down, and they gave the Royals a chance in the ninth. If that happens last year, the year before, the year before, the year before, the year before, Royals probably lose that game 8-3 because some bullpen mm-hmm. arm is imploding in a moment after, especially against Houston. Yeah. I mean, that top of the lineup.
It's a theory that Denny Matthews has, and he talks about it all the time, that the more times you go to your bullpen, the better chance there is that that guy doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. One of those guys is not going to have it that night, and if you keep having to go to your bullpen, you're going to run into a guy that might have a pitch that you know some guys at the plate run into.
And ding, ding.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's what he says.
Ding, ding. Thanks, Jason. That's exactly what I said. He said it better than I did.
We'll take a timeout. We'll, actually, you know what? Let's hear from Matt Quatrero real quick. Let's hear from Q. This is clip number five. This was just his synopsis of the game last night, watching from the dugout, and the Royals finding a way to get a win.
Another game where a ton of stuff went on. I mean, it was relatively low scoring, but there was a lot of stuff going on in that game. And Javier hadn't given up a run until that fifth inning all year. And watching him pitch, you can see why. I mean, there's tons of deception. There's slow breaking ball, the good changeup, the rising fastball. And the guys were hanging in there. They were putting together some pretty good at-bats. I thought we swung the bat, drove the ball around the field a little bit with nothing to show for it. And then the sac fly and Bobby's triple were huge. You know, and then Vinny getting the ball in play, awkward spin there, made it a tough play for Bregman. So, you know, and both, you know, they ran some good relievers out there. There's tough at-bats. We had a couple chances that we didn't capitalize on. But overall, just staying with it. I mean, I was really happy that Salvi did it, you know, quickly. You know, a lot of stuff that you don't have to try to figure out from then on out.
I would have been curious to see who you have gone to if the Royals did not score there in the 10th, because I thought he was going to bring in Nick Lofton to run for Vinny, and then Nick Lofton play first, unless he was going to move Salvi down to first and bring in Fermin. But he brought in Hampson, so then I'm wondering, okay, if he brings in Hampson to run for Vinny, if he brings in Lofton to play first, you've just wasted Hampson by running. Instead of bringing in Lofton to run, you still have Hampson on your bench if need be, and if Lofton's going to come in and play first base anyway, why not just have him run? Because you're not gaining much with Hampson to Lofton. It was odd there, unless, of course, he was going with Salvi to go play first base and Fermin to come in and catch if they did not score a run there.
I think you could also move Adam Frazier to first. I think you can move Frazier to first and Hampson to second.
Good.
We haven't seen it yet either. I think Hunter Renfroe has some experience at first, too, so they could have bounced Hampson to... See, Blanco was still in left. Isbell wasn't moving from center. You move Hampson to right, bring Renfroe into first, so you don't have to burn Fermin just yet.
Right.
Glad we didn't have to worry about it,
exactly. But I would have loved, like, when he said, you know, other decisions that don't have to be made, like the thought process of we're bringing in Hampson because if we don't score, here's A, B, and C that's going to happen now, which, you know, is one of the reasons why. And I love Boddicker, and I know he absolutely despises the rule. And this morning he said, once it got to extra innings, I turned it off. Found out this morning they won, turn it off. I refuse to watch Beer League softball. You put a man on second base, you got a ghost runner out there, not happening. We'll never watch it. And then I love Stephen St. John's like, I don't believe you. I believe you watched. But he and I completely just, I like the rule because it adds so much strategy. It makes it, it's immediate strategy. Are you pinch running? You bring this guy, are you bunting the guy over to third with Salvi up there? You're obviously not going to bunt, but if it was like Frazier, you'd have bunt him over to third and hopefully you can get a fly ball. So the different strategy that goes along with that. And I really want to know what Quatrero was going to do if they go three up, three down with Hampson at second base. Does Hampson stay in? Do you burn Hampson? Is Fermin coming in? Is Lofton coming in? Does Renfroe go to first? Like, what are they doing at that standpoint? You know,
it really does feel like the Royal. And Matt Quatrero said that coming into Kansas City that he was going to utilize his bench so much. Yeah. I would love to find the stat right now, substitutions. Royals have to be number one. And it's also why they built the roster the way they did. That's why they brought in Hampson, Frazier, their super utility guys. They can play everywhere. And Renfro could be that corner outfielder that can also play some first base. MJ Melendez can bounce around the outfield. We know Salvi now can play first base. You've got a shortstop at third base, a shortstop at shortstop, who's also played third base. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is why the roster was assembled the way it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was looking in, trying to find, Dyron Blanco. He's appeared in eight games, and he's got five stolen bases. So he comes on to first, and he steals second.
Third in the American League.
Third in the American League in stolen bases.
And, it's Dyson. This is Dyson or Gore. That's what it is.
Yeah.
He's Dyson and Gore, the better bat, too.
Agreed.
And can play, and he's Gore as a baseball player, as opposed to a stolen base mascot, you know, which is, I love Terrence Gore. I mean, he was awesome, but, you know, he is what he is. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, continue rolling. I want to talk about this bullpen and what's different now with it. Is it confidence? Are they just battling each other? Whatever's happening there. And then we've discussed MJ Melendez already. But there may be an impact, and it didn't matter in the 10th inning because he had already been taken out of the game. But an impact on Salvi for what MJ's doing early in the season. We'll also talk about the Women's National Championship game, 4 million more viewers than the Men's National Championship game. We'll get into some college basketball. Calipari is officially an Arkansas Razorback. They are calling the Hogs down in Fayetteville, not calling the Hogs. Get it? Cool. And then we'll also go through our college basketball coach rankings. If we are an AD, who are we hiring? So it may be youth, it may be different things that we view that we would want as a college basketball coach if we're the AD and every coach is available, alive or dead. Did you guys know the dead part was a part of it too? Yeah, so I'm going to hire John Wooden. He's 135, but I think he can still recruit. We'll take a timeout. More Zone next. All right, hanging out here on a Wednesday edition of The Zone. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels heading up until 2 o'clock. We will talk with Myron Metcalf at noon. We're going to do some college basketball as well. I do want to talk about the bullpen, what we've seen, a little bit on the outfield as well, some other issues, or not even issues, but takeaways from the first 11 games of the season. Let's hear Bobby Witt, though, had a fantastic play in the 10th inning to save a run, had the triple as well in the game. Here's Bobby Witt. What I did was I just took every single answer from Bobby Witt that he was asked last night. We can hardly hear the questions anyway, but as he's answering them, you sort of know what he's talking about. So here's Bobby Witt's post-game Q&A at his locker last night.
You hear it. It's great. The vibes are great. Playing some good baseball. You just got to keep it going and keep turning these good days into even better days for the future to come, and just kind of keep controlling what we're controlling and keep moving forward. Just not kind of falling into his game plan. Just taking the pitches you need to hit, and not kind of chase out of his zone. So just really just kind of narrowing the strike zone and being able to kind of just put together some at bats, play some run, get some runs across. You know, had Cole throwing and the way our bullpen's going right now. Definitely, yeah. If you never know if it's a summer day, the score could be completely changed. But yeah, you just got to keep grinding those at bats, keep putting together good at bats, and just keep trying to scratch across runs. Yeah, it was unbelievable. All those guys, those four or five guys that came in and did their job. That's what they do when they come in and compete. So it was a lot of fun to play defense behind and watch. It's just trying to be just kind of stubborn at the plate, know our approach, know our plan, and just stick to it, and just know that if we don't get our job done, the guy behind you has us. So you just got to keep grinding. Every day you come to the field, you want to win. So there's never been any other expectation than that. So that's what we try to do every day. Yeah, you got to come in every day with a new open mind and know that you want to win. And you're not going out there to try to go out and lose. So you just got to come up, win, and be prepared as much as possible.
Bobby is way better than he was a couple of years ago, and better than last year. But I also continue to give him credit that he was a rookie, and every single game would stay there and answer questions. He was the young guy, and yet some of the veterans were like, peace out, I'm leaving, I'm not answering. And Bobby was there every game. answering questions. That's a guy that early on as a 21-year-old was taking on the mantra of, okay, I'll be the leader in the clubhouse. I'll be the guy that comes in and answers the questions each and every time. No matter who's here, who's not, people leaving, I'm here at my locker. You go and cover the Royals game, you go in the clubhouse, Bobby Witt's going to be at his locker ready to talk. He may not give you much, but he's giving you
he's
more.
Answering.
Than, he's giving you more than he did, you know, a couple of years ago when it was all just, just gotta stay on the grind.
Gotta
you
be
know,
back tomorrow.
Every day, tomorrow's another day. But that was also a quiet clubhouse.
Very, not much music.
Yeah. I mean, we just gotta figure it out. You know, we just come back tomorrow. We gotta keep working. Just to keep taking our approach to the plate and working. We'll get it figured out. We'll get it turned around. But we just got to keep grinding, come back tomorrow, and play another game.
The Rockin' Mac Miller now. Last year it was poison. Every rose has its thorn. They're just depressed last year.
It's like, how's the feel? You can hear it. You know the feel in the clubhouse right now. We're feeling good. Five straight games. You're playing music after the game's over.
I don't know about both of you guys, but I'm starting to convince myself at this point there's nothing more impressive in sports than living up to almost insurmountable hype. I mean, yeah. You looked at that draft class. It was Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. Those are the only two can't-miss prospects. Everybody mm-hmm. else was. They could be good. We just don't know. We know those two guys are going to be stars. You go back to the 2000s with Alex Gordon. Remember, we put the pressure on him of, that's the next George Brett. Alex was very good at what he did. He won multiple gold gloves. He was a platinum gold glove winner. Has one of the most famous hits in Royals history. Great career. Wasn't George Brett. Right, Bobby Witt Jr. was put in a spot of being 18, 19 years old. He was taking geometry class earlier that semester. And then he goes to this organization, and that's the next superstar. He is a star. He will lead us to glory.
Yeah.
And it's year three, and he's argued as one of the best players in baseball right now and only getting better. To mm-hmm. me, when you saw it with Bryce Harper being in Sports Illustrated at 16, it's like you're dealing with pressure when you really shouldn't have to, and in sport, LeBron had it too. It was just immense pressure when you're a teenager. You've just gone through puberty, and now you're with a bunch of grown men that it's like, you got to be the guy. And he's been the guy since he was in Northwest Arkansas. It was like, where's Bobby Witt Jr.? He's going to be the guy. And that, to me, is the most impressive thing about everything with Bobby Witt Jr.
I don't disagree. And I think it's a good point you brought up with those guys. I mean, you got a couple of them that you mentioned. There are three of them in my lifetime that were the can't-miss prodigies that then went and either got to the level of expectation or surpassed what the expectation was. Tiger, LeBron, and Bryce Harper.
Yeah,
Tiger was going to be the greatest golfer we've ever seen and change the way golf is played, change the distances of golf courses. And he did that. And LeBron, is this guy going to be the next, Jordan? Is this guy the best basketball player, all-around player maybe we've ever seen? He's, 6'8", 240. He's Karl Malone playing guard, all right, in the NBA. This is absurd. And Bryce Harper, as you talked about, 16 years old, Sports Illustrated. They showed the batting practice with his dad. He's hitting 450-foot bombs with a wooden bat at 16 years old. That's absurd that he's doing that. Those guys got to, and I think all of them have exceeded what the expectations were and what the hope was for those guys. I don't know that Bobby will exceed those, but right now he's on the trajectory of being a guy that, okay, this is a can't-miss prospect. Cool, but what does that can't-miss prospect look like, even if they can't miss? Even if they don't miss, I mean. It's a can't-miss guy that doesn't miss. He's a really good player. Does that mean he's an MVP? Because there are different levels of can't-miss prospect. And not every number one or number two draft pick that's like, this guy's going to be a stud, and he turns out to be a stud. Do they win MVP? Are they a guy that plays shortstop at a high level and can hit the way that he does and is willing to take on the role of good guy in the clubhouse and talking after every game as well and filling that role and having an understanding of how it's done because he watched his dad do it his whole life?
You know how often we also talk about guys who get unlucky and they're batting 120? If their luck turns around. Bobby Witt Jr. has been unlucky, according by the underlying numbers, mm-hmm. and he's still slashing .333, .388, .667.
If that's good, I don't know. I don't follow numbers very well.
Do you know what his expected slugging is? 852, which is the best in baseball. You know what his expected on base percentage is? 528, which is the best in baseball. He's been unlucky and still slashing these numbers.
It's pretty good.
Defensively, his range is in the 98th percentile. Sprint speed, 99th percentile.
That. Yeah, he and Trey Turner and Ellie De La Cruz now.
But the point is, this is not an outlier. What Bobby Witt Jr. right now, what he is doing, is not something that we expect him to come down to earth.
Yeah.
He's supposed to, according to the underlying numbers, have actually been better than what he's doing. A lot of it's because Kaufman's just a very cavernous outfield. So.
And he's a right-handed hitter that played in Camden for three games. So.
And so I'm just sitting here going, his average exit velo is 99.5. What? As a shortstop with that defense and speed? Like, this is Ken Griffey Jr.
If he keeps it at 100 miles an hour, his bat's going to have Tommy John. That's the problem. It's all the
cork,
the high velocity that's coming out of that bat. It's just the torque that you're getting on that bat. It's you're toast.
I'm just so impressed by it's not him doing stuff that, okay, he's going to come back down. This is sustainable what he's doing. His OPS over 1,000, again, maybe it doesn't stay at 1,000, but according to what he is doing actually with the bat right now, should be over that. This is a sustainable MVP-level player that we're witnessing right here in Kansas City.
What I love about, you know, and we talk about Bobby, I want to talk about the bullpen because that's been a big part of this. And a number of these innings were against the White Sox. We acknowledge that. And you had, last night, five innings against the Houston Astros that your bullpen went out there and put up zero earned runs. But it's 16 and a third so far consecutively without allowing an earned run. And it's everybody. It's literally everybody in that bullpen has pitched at least an inning in this 16 and a third. So I went back and looked. Lyles has had one appearance. It was, you know, not a close game. It wasn't a leverage situation. One inning. Sauer, one appearance, one inning. Zerpa, two appearances, one and two-thirds in those two appearances. Will Smith, two appearances, one and a third. The third inning was not great. He got pulled, but then got the one inning and got the high fives and the smiles and everybody and maybe the monkey off his back. Nick Anderson's looked good in his two appearances, two innings. Schreiber, three appearances, almost three innings. Stratton, three innings in three appearances. And MacArthur, three appearances and now 3.2 innings pitched. So you have the guys that have pitched the most, MacArthur, Stratton, Schreiber, Anderson. Will Smith should be in that mix. At least he was brought in to be in that mix. But if he's your fifth best guy in the bullpen, and I don't know that that's going to be the case moving forward, if this particular, you know, way that we've seen with the high leverage guys coming in and coming through is going to be how it sort of shakes out. But so far, Stratton's looked good. Schreiber's looked good. Nick Anderson in these couple of outings has looked really good. MacArthur's doing his job and goes back out there for the 10th with a man on second already. And hopefully Will Smith, you know, gets back to being Will Smith, a guy who's closed many, many, many games and has won World Series and has pitched in the postseason in World Series games. There was such a negative outlook on this bullpen from the beginning because it was like, benefit of the doubt is not given to the Royals. Understandably so. So, okay, new names. They put on a Royals jersey. They look the same. At least now, and I'm hoping moving forward, it ain't going to be this. It's not going to be 16 and a third, but it's also not going to be what it started out the season when they were getting hit around and they were giving up a lot of runs.
Bullpens are streaky. You know, even the worst bullpens out there, bad Royals bullpens last few years, they would have these stretches where they'd have 16 scoreless frames, 20 scoreless frames.
Jack Johnson says, this bullpen is just like every other bullpen.
Every other one they've ever had. And what was so funny about that argument is it's not. I mean, I know that we're a couple months removed. The 2023 Royals bullpen had a new guy in there every single night. They were on fumes. Max Castillo, if you even know who the name was the setup guy for like a week in September because they were out of arms. Yeah. Like, the difference with this bullpen is these are proven grown men. Chris Stratton's done this before. Yep. Nick Anderson's done this before. Schreiber's done it. Will Smith's done it. And then you have some of the pieced together guys. Serpa, Matt Sauer, Jordan Lyles, you know, it's
MacArthur.
You know, MacArthur and stuff. And then you look at guys that could become. Carlos Hernandez is probably soon to come back. John McMillan still has to build back up again. But the positive is when you have a stretch like this, the rotation is doing well, the offense is doing well. That's what you hope for with a team like this. When everything's clicking, you're not having the bullpen blow those games. And, you know, I didn't think the bullpen was all just scrap everybody terrible after the Baltimore series because it was two series into the year, right? Mm-hmm. It was so early on, they can even out, and that's all they need to be. As we mentioned earlier, they're 16th now in ERA in baseball. You'd take that in a heartbeat. We have such an unhealthy relationship with the bullpen because of what the Royals had at one point. And get this, those two bullpens never led the league in ERA. Like, they just had three cyborgs, basically, just impossible to hit guys. But everybody else just pieced it together, and you're hoping with this group, a James MacArthur, maybe a John Schreiber, maybe Carlos Hernandez, they kind of become that guy that no matter what, we're going to them. Right now, they're kind of feeling out who is going to be the guy. Schreiber's taking a job, and James MacArthur's taking a job. Everybody else, it's let's see if they can throw the seventh. And then when they all iron out those spots, that's when you see more of this of, hey, they're going to be able to lock down a tie game. They're going to be able to lock down a one-run lead. When you're still finding out where everybody fits, you're going to have that Baltimore series where you blow a two-run lead, a one-run lead. And right now, you can't complain. But this is what J.J. Piccolo wanted. He signed these guys because they've done it before. They've been in bullpens where they've just been league average or slightly above average. And the Royals just need that with the way the rotation and offense has looked.
That was a phenomenal point, by the way, of the unhealthy relationship, trying to always go back to Greg Holland, Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, and then it's almost like the Chiefs with running backs in the offensive line. We're like, well, why isn't he Will Shields? Yeah. Why isn't that Willie Rofe? You're like, well, okay, well, they're still good. They're just not one of the best of all time. You just needed to get average, and I think you saw that with a lot of the offseason moves. Again, going back to what you're alluding to, it was why I was excited with Hunter Renfroe and Adam Frazier, and even to an extent Hampson. You're elevating the floor, right? It's no longer, we need these guys to be average. No, these guys are already average. Like Stratton and Schreiber, like these guys are, as you mentioned, they've done this. They just need to be what they have done before. We're not trying to hope that Carlos Hernandez is now a closer. No! Now Carlos Hernandez is maybe your fifth or sixth best bullpen arm. All the Royals were trying to do this offseason was raise the floor, and they have done that. You might have a guy, this guy being Will Smith, take a step back. But so far, Schreiber, Stratton, and Nick Anderson, they've been everything the Royals have assume they were going to be, and that's all they need to be.
913-912-4810. In the 16 and a third innings pitched, 11 hits, 8 walks, 16 Ks. So they've allowed 19 base runners in 16 innings, 16 strikeouts in those 16 innings as well. And like we mentioned, everybody has had a hand in doing this. And I think part of the early perception and opinion and negativity that was around and pessimism that was around this bullpen early on in the season when it was just two series in is that how many, you know, Royals fans have watched Schreiber pitch or Stratton pitch or Anderson, probably know a little bit more about Will Smith because of, you know, playing in World Series. So if you see Schreiber go out there and fail early on, you see Stratton go out there and give up a couple of runs, and it's like, oh, this is the guy they brought in? Okay. Same old, same old. You got me excited about new faces. It's the same Royals. That's where the benefit of the doubt doesn't come in. Now, you get more games under your belt, more series under your belt. Water finds its level. These guys go out there and leverage situations and do what they've done in the past. You get a little bit more of the excitement and benefit of the doubt that goes that way because it's a constant comparing to HDH. And, well, if you could have that bullpen, right, if everybody could have that bullpen, that would be awesome. If I could dunk, that would be great too. But the Royals don't have that bullpen, and I can't dunk. More Zone next. All right, wrapping up this first hour, we'll get into some college basketball in the next hour. We'll go through some of the college basketball coaches. John Calipari heading to Arkansas, and Kentucky has a job opening now. Dan Hurley asked about it on Monday night. Dan Hurley asked about it yesterday. Billy Donovan asked about it yesterday as well, head coach of the Bulls. And I figure last night when you see your team steal the ball, have an open fast break, throw it off the backboard to yourself, and two guys fight over it to dunk it, and it doesn't go in, and one guy hits his rear end on the way down. At that point, Billy Donovan might have said, you know what, I'm probably just going to be done. I guess it is tough. Can I take the UK job right now? Well, you know, we got the play-in game coming up. Cool. So we'll talk some college basketball, go through some of those things, and also the women's national championship game. 4 million more viewers than the men. More Zone next.